This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 341 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from Melbourne, once again from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Yes, I am. I have been, and I continue to be so.
Excellent.
And yourself?
Yeah, good.
Excellent.
Yes.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Another shoot coming up on Sunday.
Have you really? What are you doing photos of this time? Goldilocks?
Another girly.
Yeah, no, you've done Red Riding Hood. I thought maybe.
No.
What Disney theme can you plagiarise next?
No, not plagiarising a theme.
Hans Christian Andersen. Speaking of Hans Christian Andersen.
Yeah.
As the makers of the movie Frozen.
Yeah.
Did an homage to Hans Christian Andersen in their movie.
Oh, okay.
In that one of the characters' name is Hans.
Right.
One's Christoph.
Oh, yeah.
One's Anna,
yeah,
and there was some other, and Sven. So it's Hans Christoph Anna Sven.
Right. Wow. How's
that kind of cool, absolutely pointless photographic podcast?
That sounds like a conspiracy theory,
doesn't it? Though. So you got to shoot this weekend?
Yeah.
Where and what?
There was a girl who requested membership to the Sydney Photographers Meetup group about 3 months ago, and she said, I'm a model from France. I'm coming to Sydney for a holiday in July. Would love to get together with somebody and do a shoot. And
wow.
So I said, yeah, I'll do something with you. So, it was funny because the day after I did the shoot with Danielle last week, she reached out and said, "Oh, I'm in Sydney now. Can we do something?" I was like, "Yeah, okay, for sure." So, and as it happened, Kath has got a girl's birthday lunch thing on Sunday down in Sydney. So, sort of all worked out for the best because I can drive Kath down to her thing. And then I can go off and do a photo shoot and then come back, pick Kath up, and we can come home again.
Nice.
Yeah. So this girl, she is a model, and she's – I'm not sure if she wants modeling shots or if she just wants, really nice holiday snaps. I'm not sure what she wants.
You can have a photo of me inside the opera, house with the bridge.
Well, that's the thing, because I threw around a couple of ideas of different locations, and she said, "Oh, yeah, what about the national park near the Opera House?" And I said, "Oh, that's called the Domain." Yes.
Yeah, now she wouldn't be looking for really good quality holiday snaps. Just because she asked you to take them.
Yeah, I can sense that coming. Once again, quite happy to just play it by ear and.
Cool. See what is the weather looking like it's going to play nice?
It's meant to be sunny and 15.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Can't complain about it.
A nice winter's day.
Beautiful.
Unlike tomorrow, when it's meant to be 28 degrees.
You're kidding me.
That's what I said when I got told the news.
Bizarre weather.
I love it.
Bizarre weather.
Yeah.
Well, last year, there's no such thing as global warming, of course, but last year the world set a record for the hottest ever recorded year.
Yeah, right.
And this year's blown last year out of the water, apparently. So
wow.
A 28-degree day in the middle of winter is probably not to be unexpected.
Yeah, right.
Could become the new norm. Who knows?
What's norm got to do with it?
Yeah, exactly. She should leave the weather alone.
Yeah. So how has your week been?
It's crazy busy.
What?
Yeah, it's just
Glyn,
busy. I've been doing this four-letter word that ends in K called work.
Right.
I sat down. I dropped the kids off at school the other day.
Are you
traumatized? I sat down in front of my computer.
Yeah.
So it's like 10 to 9. Sat down in front of my computer. Did about maybe 45 minutes work. So I'll make myself a cup of morning tea. I look up. It's 2:10. Now, I know I hadn't fallen asleep because the words QWERTY weren't typed across my forehead from the keys on the computer. It's just like, it's been that kind of week. It's like everything's just, time's just flying by and you're trying to do a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, right.
So I've been putting together the tour itinerary for next October's India tour.
Yep.
Starting some ideas for 2018, which is nuts.
Wow.
So were leading a Namibia tour in 2018. We're starting to look at dates for that.
Nice.
Been meeting a couple of the sponsors, just catching up with them, especially with the new agents for Tamron in Australia. Met up with them today. That all went pretty well.
Right.
Yeah, things are looking like it's going to all be on track there, which is good.
Cool.
And I've been trying to choose a new backpack.
Oh, okay.
Bobby Pro said, oh, yeah, it's been a couple of years since you had a new backpack and that one's not made anymore. You better get yourself a new one.
Right.
And it's tough. You always get the biggest one because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know? I had my mind set up on this one. So I said, I'll take that one. And then I told Malcolm, Fackender, my tour partner.
Your partner in crime.
He goes, it's awfully big. And I've got to look at the photo on this guy's back. It's just huge. It's like, so I went back and I checked and I found one that's actually got a bigger interior, but with a smaller exterior than this one and weighs half as much.
Right.
So I've changed my mind and gone for that one.
Yeah, right.
Kind of makes a lot of sense.
Nice.
But it's amazing. Yeah, Lowepro had this bag finder feature on their website. You type in the type of camera you've got and you choose the sizes of lenses and the gear you want to put into it, and it recommends how many bags that they hit name out, which suit that amount of gear.
Right.
That's a pretty clever system.
Mm-hmm.
Except after I'd put in 3 quarts or probably less of the gear I wanted to take with me, there's no bags available to fit your gear. They just don't know how to cram stuff in properly, you know?
Right.
So I did a high-speed flash sync workshop on Saturday.
Yeah.
And used a new guy called Henry, a big he's a bodybuilder sort of fitness model. Fitness. Those guys who screams at you and makes fat people get thin.
Right.
Like, okay. Personal trainer.
Yeah.
People abuse the fat until they're no longer as fat. So what of him, he was a lovely guy, I'd only seen one photograph of him, and he looked really ugly. Yeah, it just looked horrible. Amazing physique, but really ugly.
Right.
But he wanted to come along and says, I'll come along, and showed it was actually far better looking than I expected.
Right.
So I said to him, you're nowhere near as ugly as that other photo I saw of you. Yeah, and he seemed to take that quite well for a guy with muscles about 3 times the size of my head. Yeah, you have to be a little bit circumspect with that stuff. A little bit of Australia photo industry news from this week. Where Alan Michael passed this week, and he was the
Of Michael's Camera Store.
Michael's Camera Store, the biggest independent camera store in Australia. So he hasn't been running it for a fair few years. His son Peter runs it.
Yeah.
But Pete's third generation running the camera store.
Wow.
His daughter Carly now works in the business, so she'll be fourth generation running the business.
Wow.
So Alan passing was it had a good innings, but still another changing of the guard, as they say.
Yeah.
I've been offered this new Velbon tripod too, because I'm sponsored by Velbon as well.
Right.
They've put about this new travel tripod, which I'm very keen to get me mittens on. If I can remember what it was called, it was the Ultratech UT63D.
Right.
Such a
that rolls off the tongue.
It's got the QHD 63D head to go with it. Woohoo! Right. They just don't get much better than that, I tell you. But they've actually got two sizes. I've got, of course, being a bloke, I had to get a slightly bigger size. But I've got this little video on the 43D, which I thought was pretty darn cool.
Right.
In that the guy pulls it out of the inside of his backpack.
Okay.
Yeah, so inside where you keep your lenses and stuff.
Right.
It's that small. That he picked that from inside. Actually, I'll send the link to that because it was pretty cool. Little people always asking about, what's a good travel tripod?
Yeah, right.
So there's a little YouTube link there for it.
Okay.
And it extends to a pretty decent height for something that can fold up small enough to be, inside your So it folds down. Does it say what time it folds at? No, only weighs 1 kilo, which is pretty good.
Yep.
Pretty light for a tripod. But maximum extended height is 155 centimeters. And it folds down to 34, so that's pretty good.
Wow.
So it's just it's like 13 inches long.
So that's a 5-to-1 ratio. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And the one I've gone for is a 6-to-1 ratio.
Wow.
Yeah, so it goes from 30.5, so it's actually smaller, to 157 centimetres.
Wow.
Which is pretty good. And the good thing is it can also be used down as low as 34 centimetres.
Yeah, right.
That's a pretty decent range. So
yeah, nice.
So I'm looking forward to getting. I don't know if I'll take it to my trip to America next month, but I'll definitely take it to Myanmar and later in the year and see what it's like.
Yep.
Yeah, so I was only going to be away for a few days from America, but my trip's been extended, so I'll be away for 2 weeks of our podcast next month.
Right.
I'm afraid.
Fair enough. So how many more weeks before you go?
I haven't even booked the tickets yet, but I'll probably be leaving on about the 18th.
Right. So probably another three.
Yeah, not back until like 1st of September or something.
Right.
So originally I was going to be there. I was leaving Thursday, flying back Sunday night.
Right.
So, did I tell you about the craziest, I had to fly to San Francisco. And
why?
The cheap fares, because I'm running stuff from not far from, in and around San Francisco.
Right. Because normally you'd fly into LA.
Yeah, but 41 and a half hours.
What?
Was the flight time from Melbourne to.
What, via Tokyo?
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So I don't understand why airlines put these sort of flights on, because who in their right mind will ever book them, okay?
Yeah.
So it was Melbourne to Sydney at like Wednesday night at like 9 o'clock at night. Melbourne to Sydney, so you're there about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Flies out of Sydney, 10 o'clock the following morning.
Oh, so 12-hour
layover in Sydney.
Jeez.
Then flies to LA, and there's a 13-hour layover in LA.
What?
Before it was flying on to Santa Rosa, which is where I was originally going to, which is just on the other side of San Fran.
Right.
Who in the right mind would even just fly to LA with a 13-hour layover in Sydney?
That's ridiculous.
It's beyond stupidity.
You could fly to LA and hire a car and get to San Francisco quicker than that trip.
Easily. So I've got four or five or six dates been added to my tour in San Francisco.
Well, in this 2 week period, you're visiting six US states.
No, six dates.
Dates. I thought you said states. I'm thinking, geez, you're really putting the pedal to the metal.
you can do it, geez. Especially if you fly over the top of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in the San Francisco area or the Sacramento, right. All that sort of stuff, I'll be doing a bunch of stuff around there for Mike's camera.
Nice.
Store at San Fran. So that's all new stuff that's got added on this week, which bit of a problem because I'm away and my wife has to go to Perth for a week for business at the same time.
Oh, right.
So I'm kind of glad the mother-in-law just retired or is retiring next week. That's going to come in very handy.
Bit of child minding.
So you retired and took on two extra children. Fabulous. Just what you want. So that's going to be my week. A lot of organisational stuff around that kind of stuff. Oh, I did see one other cool thing whilst I was out and about.
Yeah.
I was walking past an office supply store.
Right. Like an Office Works?
I was going to say company name. Okay. Supply. But they have a 3D printing booth in there.
Wow.
Where you can walk in. But like a 3D photo booth. So you walk in, you stand in this photo booth and they photograph you and they print you out as like a bobblehead figure.
Seriously?
3D, yeah. And they look really cool. Really cool. But what a whole new world is that?
Yeah. Does it come out in colour or is it just...
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep. And quite lifelike colour too.
Wow.
And it looks like the clothes you're wearing, the whole thing.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that's a whole new.
And what do they charge for this ego inflating service?
I didn't actually look.
Oh, okay.
I was kind of walking past. But yeah, you know, either way, it doesn't really matter because it's one of those new crazy wacky things that it's going to be cheaper at some point than it is now.
Yeah.
But just the fact that this is now available. It's called Make Your Own Mini Me. I'll put a link in. I'll tell you how much it costs. $99 for a small one.
What's a small one?
100 millimetres, so 10 centimetres.
Right.
Which is not horrendous. Yeah. You know, how big do you want yourself to be? Yeah, you're going to make a mini me, you're not going to make it life size.
No, I guess not.
I'll put a link in so you can see what they look like because they're pretty darn good.
Cool.
You know? So that kind of blew me away. They have this whole zone at the front of their store set up for it. It's just, you know, you don't see something completely new very often, you know, in this world.
Okay.
I mean, something in our industry, in photo and printing, that's never been available before.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden there's this whole zone where you can walk in and do something that, hitherto before now, impossible to be seen. So
yeah, true.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right.
So that's been my week. busy and stuff.
Excellent. Excellent.
Oh, I did ask a question before we get into the stuff for the night. I did ask a question on Facebook tonight.
I saw
Has
that.
Anyone got any questions? Yeah, you didn't see that. Anyone got any questions about photography they'd like to ask that we could maybe, you know, rather than just talking about stuff that we've seen, we can talk about what people are thinking about.
Yep.
And, yeah, most of it was rubbish, you know. what was all rubbish? Someone said, you know, what do different shaped softboxes do? And my response, of course, was, well, they give you a different shape catch lights in the eyes. but I thought the best one coming out of the group was from Ken Dixon from up in Queensland, from Mount Gravatt Camera Photographic Society. And it was, if you only had 10 minutes with a newbie to give advice, what would you give them? What would you, you know, what kind of advice would you give to a person if you had 10 minutes to try and help them out as they were starting photography?
Right.
So this question's for you.
Hey?
So this question's for you.
Why is it for me?
Because I want to put you on the spot.
What advice would I give somebody in 10 minutes?
If you only had 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay. And we're assuming...
You have to talk 10 minutes now about it.
And we're assuming that they know virtually nothing about photography but are keen on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Where would you start? I would say, first of all, get over the idea that subject matter is more important than light, because it's not. I think light...
So you tell them what the word photography means.
Yeah, absolutely. So to draw with light, photo meaning to draw. Graph to draw, photo light. I would explain, you know, how light is the key to every great photograph. And to back that up, you know, you can see a still life of the most inanimate object, and if it's well lit, it's a compelling image. And conversely, you can take, you know, the most beautiful looking woman in the world and shoot her under really appalling conditions, a la paparazzi type photos, and they just look like ordinary people, you know, and they look like crap. So light is everything. That would be my first thing. I would then, you know, obviously cover the holy trinity of ISO, shutter speed, and aperture.
Let's back that up. Okay. How on earth would you cover that to a newbie who knows nothing in 10 minutes?
Well, I'll have to take 10 minutes to have that talk.
Yeah, but you understand how complex, all of a sudden you're getting something, so you're diving into something incredibly complex.
Yep. I could cover that trinity within the 10-minute period.
But do you reckon they would understand it?
I think so.
I spend 6 hours with people who even have some idea about photography, teaching my Understand Your Camera workshop.
Yep.
And at the end, half of them still have less idea than when they started.
Really?
Which could teach, say, what kind of crappy teacher I am. I personally, so this is what I thought was interesting to have this discussion. I thought, you know, we could see how, I think you'd be doing a disservice to try and explain that to them.
Right.
Because all you're going to do is make it set. I can't fathom a way that even ISO can be explained easily in a 10-minute zone where people have no idea about photography and how that relates to everything else without completely stuffing up their brains.
Okay.
So the analogy I love to use and stuff is you'd be very careful about how you explain stuff to people, because people only hear parts of what's being said.
Right.
And if it's about something that's a bit out of their comfort zone, they just can get confused and be scared for a very long time. And the classic analogy is a guy I used to know, at about age 8, his aunt decided for some bizarre reason to have the birds and the bees talk with him. Now, he had his own mum and dad.
8?
She just decided to jump in there. Exactly. So he had very little understanding, very little knowledge, very little comprehension. And she decided to try and explain something that's moderately complex.
Yeah.
Now, he kind of missed bits.
Right.
The bits that he missed were quite important.
Right.
From the age of 8 to 13.
Yeah.
So what he basically got that was young boys, when they reach this thing called puberty, they turn to women. And young girls, when they hit this thing called puberty, turn into men.
Right.
So from the age of 8 to 13, he was waiting to turn into a woman.
Jesus.
Now, that's not going to stuff you up, is it? That's not going to throw any curveballs in life. A simple misunderstanding could throw curveball these people for any. This is a true story.
Yeah, right.
Horribly true story. So I personally would. Now you may be far better explaining those in simple manners to someone, but for my personal opinion, it would be something I'd shy away from all terminology, all numbers.
So how then are you in 10 minutes going to get them up and running?
You don't necessarily have to get them running.
Oh.
What would you say to someone if you only had 10 minutes who was starting out? So you don't have to necessarily teach them how to take a photo, but you have to be able to give them the confidence and to actually go out and try for themselves.
Right.
To just say, yes, you can do this. Go and give it a shot. You don't have to necessarily teach them how to do it. Just inspire them enough to actually make them pick up a camera and try.
Right. Well, in that case, I would start with light, and I would probably then try and relate some stories of great photographers across different genres, because everyone's got a different taste for photography. Yes.
Yep.
You know, some people loved the idea of shooting weddings. Some people love the idea of shooting landscapes. Some people love the idea of street photography, you know. So I would, you know, try and, you know, think of leading lights, if you like, from from each genre of photography, and maybe try and talk a little bit about those people and what they did, and, you know, why their images were so compelling, and try and tap into whatever it is this newbie is excited about within photography. If we're not aiming to get them up and shooting, then I guess that would be my approach.
Yeah. The only thing I would probably add to that would be teach them not to be brand conscious.
Fair enough.
Yeah. They don't have to spend a lot of money to get involved in photography. You can go out and buy a 10-year-old secondhand digital SLR and still have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can still go out and buy a basic camera with a kit lens.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah, you got to just try and stay away from the snobbery of photography as an early point of view.
It's funny you mention that. I don't know if I actually put it in the links. I don't think I have. There was something I saw through the week, and it was on one of the photography blogs that we tend to rely on a lot, and it was talking about, you know, the YouTube channel Digital Rev.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently they have a series of videos where they take a pro photographer and give them a really crappy camera get them to go and shoot the best images they can with that particular camera. And in the particular story that I saw linked, you know, they'd given this guy a camera they'd bought secondhand for $20, and it was, I can't remember what it was. It was like a really early Canon digital camera, or a Ricoh digital camera or something. It was like 3.5 megapixels and very limited in what it could do. And I thought, that's just spot on the money. You know, we need to be reminded of that stuff every time we, lusting after new gear that we don't really need. We just want.
Exactly. So it's three things. It would be light. Totally agree with that.
Yep. Inspiration.
Inspiration. And realistic gear choices.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way of phrasing all those things. And then if you can give them those things, they know what's important, they can look at some stuff that can inspire them photographically, and they can afford to get into it.
Yep.
Then it's not a bad start for 10 minutes, I reckon.
Fair enough.
If you can give that.
Yep.
Because they don't have to learn everything. This is the thing. Sure, everything has to be immediate these days, but you don't have to learn photography in 10 minutes. You have to learn photography in 10 years.
Yep.
You'll never master photography, so what's the rush?
Unless you're Mike Holman.
Oh, he's just a tosser, though, isn't he? Yeah. lovely man that he is. Lovely.
Love you, Mike.
Yes. So he on Facebook today, he put up that he's won the New Zealand.
No, that was Vivian that put that up.
Oh, I thought he put it up as well.
Oh, did he?
But he won Travel Photographer of the Year for 2016. So he's won 2013, 2014, 2016. So, of course, I gave it to him with a couple of weeks ago. Couldn't get 2015 though, could you? Huh? No.
So underachiever.
Yeah. 3 out of 4 years. You call that effort? Yeah. But I reckon if we were tasked with giving someone some some inspiration to get out and start maybe think that, yes, they could give photography a go, that would be a pretty good way to go.
Yeah.
So hopefully that answered Ken Dixon's questions
and,
too.
And I think somewhere in that 10 minutes, I would probably mention again the whole Helsinki bus terminal analogy, you know, of, you know, get on don't the bus, bus and stay on Helsinki. The bus, you know, don't keep changing, you know, decide what it is that you love and pursue that, you know, until you're out there on your own doing something that no one else is doing. You know, the chopping and changing and constantly starting from scratch is simply going to waste your time.
Unless you don't like what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you're disappointed with your choice, then by all means change it.
You don't become a concert violinist overnight.
No.
Yeah. But if you start playing the violin and go, yeah, this is really hurting my neck, I think I might take up guitar or drums.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay too. You can go, I'm not going to do landscapes, I'm going to do travel photography. And then, I can't afford to fly anywhere. I better go to people shooting. You know, it's okay to chop and change, but try. But yeah, it's like maybe when you leave school, if you've got no idea what you're going to do for a career, maybe you try a few different things so you find something you like, yeah, and then pursue that like crazy.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, that was pretty good. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, thank you.
That's nice. I just put on our little list of stuff to whilst I was researching stuff for the India itinerary for next year, because we're finishing up at the Pushkar Camel Fair at the end of the tour. But I found this guy's done this drone footage over the top of the Pushkar Camel
Mark. I watched that yesterday.
Yeah, so I put the link up there too. It was pretty cool. And yeah. If anyone's thinking about going somewhere pretty amazing for some photo opportunities, there's a place to go right there.
What is it? The Pushkar Camel what?
Fair.
Fair, right.
But basically, it's a camel trading. Yeah. So, at a particular it's a festival, and at a certain time of the year called Kartik, people come together.
Sorry, are they trading camels, or they just come on camel to trade their goods?
Trading camels. Camels and livestock, so camels, donkeys, wild horses, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But there'll be 300,000 people descend on this small village.
Oy, oy, oy.
Small town.
Right.
Tens of thousands of camels and tens of thousands of wild horses and all sorts of stuff. But they have, like, yeah, camel beauty pageants. They have camel races, of course.
There's so many wrong jokes off there.
Yeah, I know. They've got they're like longest moustache competitions. You know, people
right.
All sorts of it's a celebration around this period of time.
Yeah, right.
And it's also a holy month, and the lake in this town is a holy lake where people go to bathe to purify themselves. So the last day of the festival, so it's time to go with that. So it's a pretty cool place to be photographing both the pilgrims and camel traders and, you know, incredible characters and so on.
Yeah, right.
So that's, I think, the camel fair culminates next year in November the 4th. It goes for about 5 days, so like end of October to November the 4th.
Right.
We're leading a tour there if you want to come along.
Cool.
But, and anyone wants to drop us a line. But that's as a photographer who likes people and exotic locations, it's going to be on most people's bucket list, I would imagine, to go there. So
yeah,
it's a pretty cool bit of footage just to see what it's like.
Yep.
It's kind of nuts. That's from the 2013 thing, which is interesting because that's 2013 and it's a drone. And,
yep.
Yeah.
That was cutting edge for its day.
Exactly. You sort of think drones are kind of now. And 2013 seems so long ago now, but it was it was out and about and been done.
Yep.
Right, so what have we got on our plate this week? Have we got anything exciting?
Well, we might as well continue with your list.
Oh, that was all my stuff. I did see Seagate announce a 10-terabyte drive.
No, that's insane.
It's a desktop drive, so it's meant to go into your computer.
Yeah. It's so bizarre, you know, because I remember probably back around the time that 1-terabyte drives first appeared, which would be, I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
I remember seeing things about, all the propeller heads who build the hard disks reckon we are, you know, right on the cusp of reaching the optical density limit, you know, that we, you know, they won't be able to cram any more data onto a platter, hey?
You know what that was?
What?
Wrong.
Yeah. Totally.
Alien technology allows us now to get to 10 terabytes.
Yeah.
So the new Phase 1 camera, which its TIFF files are 700 megabytes
Yikes.
For one bloody photo, you can fit 14,000 of those on this. And the Canon 5DRS RAW files, which I think, I don't know, 50-something megabytes order, 125,000 of these things.
Nice.
Onto you. So I reckon 10 terabytes. Or, yeah, put 4 or 5 of those in your computer. You should be almost about right.
Ideally, you'd put them in a NAS box.
Yeah. But here's the thing. They were forecasting the price to be only about $550.
Wow.
Which I didn't think was, you know, for the first of its type to be that horrendous.
No. And per terabyte, you know, price per terabyte, that's very compelling.
$509, even cheaper. Yeah,
right. Wow.
Yeah, so it's not so horrendous.
Was there a release date for this drive?
Terror, Seagate, Barracuda. It's available now. Ships within 2 to 4 weeks.
Right.
But it looks like it's basically available now.
Yeah, right.
Which is pretty good. Yeah, $508 on Amazon.com.
Nice.
It's astounding when you think about it.
Yeah. Now, I saw your next heading was the Canon 40-800, and I saw Adam Davidson make a comment about this in your post on Facebook tonight.
So someone's found another one of these patents that camera companies have been putting in for who knows how many years about potential designs they've come out with.
Yep.
So the Canon claimed to have got the patented a 40-800, 4.5 to 5.6 lens.
That'd be awesome, bokeh 800 mil at 5.6.
Takes 18 tripods to hold it.
Yes. Yes. You mount it on the back of a truck.
Yeah, so about 40-800, which is quite remarkable.
Which is 20 times optical.
Is it 40 times? Yeah, it is. I knew that. But 2 months ago, they came out with a 28 to 560.
Right.
Which, just for your sake, yep. 20 times zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so you know.
Yeah.
And previous to that, the 1,000mm 5.6. So these are sort of lenses that they've been patenting of late.
So it makes you wonder, have they got the technology to build these lenses? Or are they just hoping that they can maybe pull it off one day and then they'll have the patent for it?
Had the patent, and maybe one day we'll be able to actually make the thing, in a package that's actually usable or something, you know?
Yeah. It's probably a case of they've got the technology, but they would end up being so hideously expensive that...
I don't think they could make them small enough.
Yeah, and I think cost would be a factor, and the cost would be so high that there would be very little market for them.
Yeah, you're probably talking about $60,000 lens or something. Yeah, exactly.
Sell, you know, 100 of them worldwide, it's not worth the machining costs.
Yeah. So better to sit on that patent it and sit on it for a while and see what happens.
Yep. Because if you wait 5 years, that sort of focal length will be in your phone. Yes. And then you can sue the phone manufacturer.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the lenses to be in the cloud, so I can just download the lenses in the cloud.
That's it.
I feel like that's a lot easier. You have to carry it around if it's just floating around the cloud. You just reach up and pull it down, put it on your camera, and then put it back in the cloud.
Yes.
It saves your camera all the stuff in your back. There's an innovation right there. forget about your drones for taking photos. Drones to carry your gear around.
There you go.
It's got to have a decent battery life, but a drone that sort of it just sort of follows you along, like some of those drones do. You wear like a little wrist bracelet thing. It follows you around to say 20 feet up, so no one can steal your gear.
Yep.
And when you need something, you tap your wrist. The thing calms down. You swap lenses. It goes back up again.
That would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Give it 20 years. It'll be a done deal.
You know, it'll be there. You'll be on your hoverboard and zip along with this thing zipping along behind you.
That's right.
Yeah, we thought of it first, dude.
That's right.
Oh, I mean, me.
That's right.
I try to be inclusive.
We when it happens, we can point to prior art. We can go, see, this is when the podcast came out. We called it. It's ours.
The rest of our episodes can go to hell. You can delete those off the net, but keep this one.
That's right.
I came across Jackie Kennedy's personal Leica flex camera. is up for auction on eBay.
Wow.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing I didn't know about Jackie Kennedy. Right. Is that when she left high school, she was a photographer.
No, I did not know that.
Me either. She was a photographer and she covered two things. Well, two things that I saw.
Right.
She probably did more than that. Dwight Eisenhower's induction as
inauguration. The president.
Inauguration as the President of the United States.
Right.
And the Queen's, the Queen of England, Queen's inculcation, whatever it is, inauguration, when she became Queen.
Wow.
So she covered that.
Wow. Who was she working for?
She was working for some magazine. She was Woman with a Camera or something it was called.
Yeah, right. And probably in that day, that would have been a rarity in itself.
Oh, yeah. So her job was basically to walk the streets of Dallas, I think it was. I'm not saying Dallas, but it might not be. Photograph people and then ask them questions for an article.
Wow.
So she was like a little photojournalist. Yeah, right. A woman in the street kind of thing. And that was pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So I never knew that about her. And,
Wow. So bidding is currently at $5 short of $9,000 for her.
Yeah, is there any actual bidding or is that just the starting point?
Oh, actually, that's a good point. There's 32 people watching it.
Yeah,
but maybe no bids. No one's bid on it yet. Yeah,
so I'm one of those 32.
Are you?
Watching, so just seeing it. So it'd be interesting to sort of see. But I think they had some other stuff there as well. I think they had a couple of lenses and stuff as well.
Yeah, right.
So interesting little find. Apparently it was all sold at Sotheby's a few years ago. So if you buy the camera, you get the Sotheby's bill of sale as well.
Yeah, the letter of authenticity.
Yeah, so it was a Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, the wife of blah, 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 blah. After Jacqueline Bouvier graduated from George Washington University, started a job in the fall of 1951 as inquiring camera girl for the Washington Times Herald newspaper.
Wow.
Inquiring camera girl. That was her title. Roving around the city, she took pictures of people she encountered, asked them questions on the issues of the day, and wove their answers into a newspaper column. Wow. Covered the 1951 inauguration of Dwight D. Eisenhower and the 1953 coronation, that's the word, of Queen Elizabeth. During this time, she met Massachusetts congressman, soon to be U.S. Senator, John F. Kennedy.
Wow.
So as a photographer, she met Kennedy, is it?
Wow.
And,
how interesting.
I thought it was so you get the camera and several photographs of her using cameras, doesn't say this particular camera, right. Using cameras, including an image of her using a similar or possibly this very camera.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's ridiculously expensive, but kind of cool. One of my favorite stories, because I used to train salespeople as well, one of my favorite stories is actually from the John F. Kennedy Sotheby's auction.
Oh, okay.
And his cigar humidor was up for auction.
Yeah.
And there's a fairly fierce bidding war for it, and this guy bought it for like $56,000, his little cigar humidor. He was the editor of Cigar Aficionado magazine.
Oh, okay.
So it was going to be his big publicity for his magazine. He's going to buy this. All the world's press were going to interview him about how much he spent on this thing, blah, 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 blah. And what I love so much about the story was, you got to make sure you get your press right, because everyone who interviewed him, or a lot of people, instead of Cigar Aficionado magazine, they quoted him, and the owner of Cigar and Fishing magazine bought Cigar Humidor.
What?
Cigar and Fishing, Cigar Aficionado. There's a fish in there somewhere. So all that for publicity, and you didn't quite work out the way you thought. And then I came across this absolutely ridiculous article, which I've titled, if you try hard enough, you can prove anything.
Right.
And it's Lines Reveal the Great Compositions in Famous Movies.
Oh, what?
And they've got all these movie stills, and they're showing how all these rules of composition have been used.
Oh, bollocks.
Which means if you freeze enough frames, you're going to find something, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
The only one I can say with any real credence would be Stanley Kubrick, because he used an awful lot of vanishing point stuff in his movies. There's a big key thing. But they've got stuff like the tilt of the angle on the SS Titanic as it was sinking was the composition of the camera angle suited a certain buddy rule of halves or whatever. It's like, where else is the boat going to go down? You know? But it's just another thing that if you try hard enough, you're going to be able to find compositional buddy rules on everything, aren't you, really? That's it. So this guy's come out with this article, and then funnily enough, gee, he's got his own app out where you can get all these templates on your iPhone or your Android and overlay them over an image you're going to take, as long as, of course, you're taking it with your iPhone or the lens with the same focal range. It's just
talk about clutching at straws.
I know, yeah.
I particularly like the randomness of the template for Children of Men. Scrolled down that far?
Yeah.
That's like, just, how is that a rule of composition?
Well, yes, if you try hard enough, you can make anything a rule of composition. But on his Composition Cam app, you have star composition, compass composition, diamond, blueprint. You have moons, star, which means you can pretty much overlay any shape you damn well can imagine over enough stuff. Yeah. It's going to work out, you know?
He's taken the Windings font and he's turned it into a bunch of templates.
We've got the Marilyn Monroe bosom font, you know, a template. You got them all. So I thought, well, last week it was the Fibonacci template. This week we can do the iTunes composition cam, which I think is kind of amusing.
Dear.
So that was kind of it for me. I just had those few little things and stuff.
Well, a couple of things that I came across this week. One is a YouTube channel, and I've known about this YouTube channel for ages and ages and ages because Max watches it all the time.
Slow-mo guys.
And I thought, why have I never mentioned this? The Slow-mo guys. And basically these guys, for those who don't know the Slow-mo guys, have a YouTube channel.
What are they doing?
They do slow-mo photography.
Really?
Or cinematography, if you like. And they, you know, they blow crap up and, you know, they do all sorts of destructive things and film it at extraordinarily high frame rates. One that I was watching this week was where they heated up, you know the glass Pyrex containers? Pyrex. Yeah.
32,400 frames a second.
They'd heat these things up and then they would drop a drop of ice-cold water in it. And the glass would just shatter instantly. And they shot this on video at varying frame rates, but I think the maximum, it was 384,000 frames a second. And it's just phenomenal to watch the shape of the fracture move through the glass.
Yeah.
You know, within, you know, picoseconds almost. It's just insane. Yeah. But they have a whole channel, you know, so if that kind of stuff floats your boat.
They're a little bit like the Will It Blend guys.
Yeah, very much. Yeah,
Will It Blend slow-mo. If they're the only two channels you watch on YouTube, you've got yourself some good entertainment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, last week you gave me a challenge.
I did.
You said it'd be interesting to see what would happen if when you're manually trying to stitch together a pano, if you inverted the image that you're trying to bring in on the next layer up and reduce the opacity, then you'd have white stars and black stars and that they should be easier to line up. So I gave it a try.
Was it horrendous? Was it diabolical or was it...
It was different. So if you look at the first image, and I will put these images in the show notes for anyone that wants to check them out. So what you're seeing in the first image is frame number one on the bottom layer of a Photoshop document, and then the second image on layer two inverted but at full opacity.
Yeah.
So you're kind of seeing the whole Milky Way and half of it's, you know, positive and half of it's negative. Then if you go to the second image, you've got the exact same layup except the second layer, the higher layer in the stack, has been reduced to 30% opacity. And if you zoom in on that, you can actually see there's one star that I've used as the lineup point. And it's kind of weird because you can see these, they're like ripples in a pond emanating out from that one star, which is where the whole of the rest of the galaxy is moved just a little bit in between the taking of the two frames. And then if you go to the third image, I've then changed the inversion back to both positives but the top layer is still at 30%. Yeah. And again, you can see that, you know, that sort of patterning of where celestial bodies have moved between the frames. Yeah. Did it necessarily make it easier? No, I don't think it made it easier, but it's certainly another approach. I think it's a valid approach. And then obviously, you know, once you've positioned all of your layers, you then need to run from the edit menu in Photoshop. There is blend layers, and that will then create seamless blends between all of the layers in your stack. So yeah, it's an approach. I don't know that I would use it, but it's certainly another approach to doing it.
Well, as we say with Photoshop, there's a million ways to do everything, isn't there?
That's exactly right. More than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I came across a video this week that popped up on one of the photography blogs that we follow, but the link that I've grabbed is actually just directly to the YouTube video that this photography blog was linking to. And it was a little 5-minute video on explaining the inverse square law, which I'm sure most of us have covered. Some of us know it. Some of us read about it once and have forgotten. That's me. I'm always forgetting it. That's why I keep going back to these types of videos, because I figure if I keep watching them often enough, eventually it'll sink in. Yeah. But this guy did a really good job of explaining it, or I thought anyway.
Awesome.
Yeah. And basically what he said was that for every doubling of distance.
Don't go there. Go on.
For every doubling of distance, the quantity of light goes down by a factor of 4, so it quarters.
Yeah, it's just, this is not going to help anybody.
Okay, moving on. Link will be
watch the video
show notes. Yeah. Steve Peters sent us the Google Translate story that you covered last episode. And I thought, is he not paying attention? But when I posted on Facebook and said, yeah, mate, we covered this in last week's episode, he said, yeah, I was putting it here for reference because Glenn hadn't provided me with a link.
And so, what I also failed to mention, it does live audio
translation. Wow.
So if you're talking to someone in Chinese, or a Chinese person, you can say, hello, can you tell me where the train station is? And it'll translate into Mandarin straight away.
Wow.
And as well for you. And it, my father-in-law speaks fluent Mandarin, and it's not perfect, because we tested it out.
But I'm sure it'd get you out of a hole.
A reasonable good job.
Yeah, nice.
So, yeah. So, that's, once again, another tool that helps those countries where things are a bit difficult, at least be a little bit less difficult.
Yeah. So, well, I'm sure this stuff's going to come in very handy when I'm in Europe next year.
Absolutely.
So, thank you for that link, Steve. I appreciate that. And Steve also sent us one, a story about a wedding photographer who basically makes you look like you're from Lilliput. He makes these tiny, you know, compositions using toys and things and a tilt shift lens, and composites the photo of the bride and groom into a scene and makes it look like you're as small as these tiny little, you know, toys or whatever. Yeah. It's very gimmicky, but I also think it's pretty niche. I haven't seen anyone else doing anything like it. And it's probably one of those things that will date really badly.
Yeah. But all power to them.
Absolutely. It's that whole thing of, you know, coming up with an idea that no one else has done.
Yeah.
And, you know, milking it. So good on them. So, yeah.
And least but not last, I think. There's only one last thing on our list. Because Google's my battery on my laptop's about to run out. Right. I'd just like to say goodnight now.
Right, okay. So this last one was from Adam, and this was some World War II photos from the Rescued Film Project. And this was a story of... sorry?
Saw this, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This guy on the Rescued Film Project got sent 31 rolls of undeveloped film from a World War II photographer. And the video is really interesting because, as he said, you know, you can't bulk process this stuff because every roll of film is different. You know, some look like they had a bit of water damage, you know, and they had not all been you know, stored under the same conditions. So he said, you know, some people might question the validity of me processing this film in my kitchen, you know, and using my bathroom as a dark room and all this sort of stuff. He said, but you can't send this out to a big film processing house because they're just going to use the same process for every roll of film. And
yeah,
this project required a much more hands-on approach. So it was very interesting doco.
Cool.
And this stuff, you know, was obviously of great historical importance, you know, at the time. And, you know, there were probably relatives of people whose images were captured on these 31 rolls of film. It was really interesting. And as the guy said, you know, because this is undeveloped film, oh, we just lost Glenn. As the guy said, you know, because these were rolls of undeveloped film, he got a real buzz out of knowing that when these images were processed, he was the first person to ever see them. So, yeah, really interesting story. Thanks, Adam. I really enjoyed that doco. So Glenn's gone. So we shall be back next week. As far as I know, there is nothing on the horizon which will suggest that there won't be a podcast. So all things being equal, we'll be back next week. And we'll talk to you then. Bye.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.